Ava. Okay, so we're really getting Ava. Hi, we're having a bridge here tonight. I'm sorry, we're starting this, and hopefully we're going to continue with this tomorrow, but I want to show you a different methodology with regard to Tanakh, and not just Tanakhic personalities, but also Tanakhic teachings and Agadot. So we've already seen this a little bit through conservation of personality, like the timeless value of the representation of Sarah Fatasher. But we actually began one of our first Shirim was to show how Chazal go out of their way to compare Rabbi Akiva with Moshe Rabbeinu. And we explained that part of the reason for doing this is because Moshe Rabbeinu's Torah obviously is the Torah that we have, and yet Rabbi Akiva infuses it with a certain sense of creativity, ingenuity, but at the same time he teaches that it's really a continuous Torah of Moshe. But I'd like you to see what hopefully we're going to be learning together now is how even stories, now we're going to take a look at Rabbi Akiva's stories that you all should be familiar with by now, because we already, I'm pretending that you were at all those shiurim, as if you were, and now we're going to see just how brilliant and beautiful the different nuances of the Midrash are. So I pointed out some of them because I couldn't help it when we were learning about Rabbi Akiva, but now we're going to take a look and we're going to focus on literally how Chazal are going to weave themes, common themes, and common stories in order for us to appreciate that there is a common thread. Want to see that? Now, what does that mean? Sometimes, for example, we see that, okay, when I learned the Choni HaMa'agel story, we also learned that, I'm supposed to be thinking about Eliyahu HaNavi. So how did Chazal tell me that? Oh, Shimon ben Shetach compares Choni to Eliyahu. That means any of the wise readers know, oh, if I really want to appreciate the story, I have to go back to the story in Sefer Melachim, right? By telling me that Choni is like Habakkuk HaNavi, what are Chazal saying? If you really want to understand the story, go back to Habakkuk. And not just that you'll see, you know, common, you know, one-liners, you'll see a lot of common threads, right? If you want to understand Rabbi Yochanan, you have to go back, you know, earlier in time. You want to understand Serach Bat Asher, obviously in Chazal, you have to go back to the way that it appears in Pshat, but it's more even within Chazal. I'm going to try to think of another example that we saw ourselves. You want to understand why Chazal say that Ephrat is Miriam, you have to go back to all the Miriam stories, right? Everyone see this? That's one way, right, of appreciating how Chazal are going to associate. The other is sometimes they choose, as in any form of literature, common motifs. Right, somewhat so, just to give you a sense of this, somewhat so that there are certain authors that do this as well. Here's a good example, right? How many of you, because I mentioned this already in another shiur, how many of you read all the Harry Potters? Excellent. Thank you. Mitsuya. Kala kavod, I encourage it. Excellent. Even if you did, how many of you read some of the Harry Potters? Wonderful. Which ones?
I mean, the first
thing. That's okay. Did you follow the story, even though you didn't read all of them?
Yeah.
Excellent. Yes, meaning every story, every year, basically stands alone. At the same time, what did J.K. Rowling do in order to show you that, ideally, they definitely appreciated it. They got, you know, I don't even know which ones you read, but you got a lot out of it, and were able to get a sense of her literary style, right, and figured out what a muggle is, right? It may have, you know, taken a little while, but you got it. But J.K. Rowling at the same time is trying to tell you that if you would have read all of them, you would have even gained more from those other two. Because there are certain motifs that play within the stories, right? For example, coming with me for a minute, right? Even year seven refers back to, you know, like the mirror, you know, or the invisible cloak. It wasn't in every volume, but it was in like the second, and it was in the first, and like a lot of them, she placed Dafka like in seven back to one, right? Just to show you, you know, still common threads.
There's a moment in four where Dumbledore has a realization and only learn about it in seven.
Thank you. Exactly. Now, what does that show? Oh my gosh, that was brilliant. Brilliant. Now, what does that show? Why did she do that? She knew about
it. To get you to read all of it.
To get you to read all of it. Excellent. Number one. Number two.
Bigger background.
Okay, right, greater background, you'll appreciate it more when you get to number seven, and
common threads,
yeah. Right, to show you that it really is one continuous story, even though they all really do stand alone. And she also wants to tell you something brilliant, and that she already knew what she was going to write in 7 when she wrote in 4, right? Everyone knew that, right? Meaning she knew. She, on interviews, would say, yeah, she knows what's in 7 already, even though she didn't write it yet. And this way, she can play off. So a certain degree, it creates a certain uniformity, so that even if one sugya is going to be in Ksuvos, and another one's going to be in Nedarim, and another one's going to be in Menachot, when you learn all of Shas, what happens? First, you get really excited when you see, and oh my gosh, like I know exactly what that's referring to, and then I say, yes, you have those moments. Right? I love it when, you know, girls in seminary, for the first time, they're learning Torah all day, and they come to one shir, and they go to another shir and say, oh my gosh, we never knew this before, and now it's like coming up all over the place. Or you learn Daf Yomi, and then like you're learning something in Halacha, and it parallels, oh my gosh, I just did a Osik Mitzvah, Chatur Menah Mitzvah, you know, and not different Sugyot, and what do you know, it's today's stuff. Okay, so let's take a look. And I'm going to see this right now. I'm going to take a little motif, which is the motif of the hair. Now, I'm definitely using something like that, because when you think of hair, what do you think of?
Pretty.
Okay, what else?
Shimshon.
Very nice. I mean, there are hair stories, mm-hmm. Definitely. And again, Allison's looking at me like, hair is hair. Like, show me what you want. And she's right on one hand. But here's a great example. Gila already says, but I actually have hair stories in Tanakh. And what does hair seem to symbolize in Tanakh?
Strength.
Right? Hair, again, is strength. What else is hair?
Gava,
where do you see that? In Tanakh, not in Medrash.
Shalom.
Very nice, of Shalom, right? The beauty of the hair can be Gava, excellent. Right, so what we're going to see then, how is Chazal going to use hair? So we're going to see that hair actually comes up a lot in Rabbi Akiva stories. Now that's super duper ironic, considering that Rabbi Akiva was
modest.
Bald. But yes, right? So if he doesn't have hair, I guess he's also modest. And that's the first story that we see, that he's a shepherd. Okay, no hair in this part of the story in Ketubah, where we hear that Rabbi Akiva was the shepherd of Ben Kala Sabua, one of the wealthiest patrons of Yerushalayim, the daughter of Kala Sabua, saw how humble he was and said, if I allow you to be Makadish me as your wife, will you go off and you learn Torah? And he says, yes. When Kala Sabua heard about this, he got so angry that he had completely banished his daughter, right, from enjoying any of the Nechasim. And we spoke a lot about this in terms of the relationship between Rabbi Akiva and his father-in-law, Moshe and his father-in-law. But let's take a look at another version of the story in Masechet Nedarim. And in Durham we hear, okay, same thing, Rabbi Akiva, Roa shel Kavos Avo, Aya, Rata Rachel Bito shel Kavos Avo, Shu Tzanu Amola, Amra lo, Im Etzkadesh lo, Lacha, Telech Leveis HaMedrish, Amra Lahein, Netzkat shelo Betzina, Shama Kavos Avo, Hotzim Beito, Vezira Nam Nikol Nachasa. Right, the story is exactly the same. However, take a look. In Masechet Tovot, it says that what happened right after they were married, she sent him off to the Beis Medrash for 12 years, he came back with 12,000 students, she sent him again for another 12 years, he came back with 24,000 students. Boom, fast forward 24 years. The Gemara in Nedarim tells us actually there was a scene in between, and that was Bimot HaChoref. Before they went to the Beis Midrash, they had a honeymoon, but it wasn't much of a honeymoon because they were living in literally a stable. Without all they had to lie on was hay. And every morning, Bimot HaChoref, Hayu Nishanim B'Matvein, Haya Malakei Teben Mitoch Sa'aroteha. And Rabbi Akiva would literally pick out the straw from her hair. Right? So you're saying, oh, that's so nice. That isn't where it ends. Amarla, il male haya biyadi, if I had it in my hand, hayiti notein lach Yerushalayim shel zahav. If only I could, I would give you Yerushalayim shel zahav. Now, if we have more time, I would show you how there are modern midrashim, like Rabbi Yehuda Halevi's poems, and Naomi Shimmer's Yerushalayim Shel Zahav, that are all built off of these stories of Midrashei Chazal. One can even call them like modern Midrashim. But let's take a look at the most basic Midrashim.
Sounds like Rumpelstiltskin also.
Ah, so you're thinking Rumpelstiltskin, and I'm thinking O. Henry. Remember the gift of the Magi?
Yes, yes, yes.
Right? That he was willing, you know, he wanted to buy her the pendant in her hair, and she wanted to buy him the chain for the watch. Right? I cry every time I hear that story. Right? Please tell me you all know what I'm talking about. This happened to literature. In any case, in the end, she cuts her hair to buy him the chain, and he sells the watch to buy her the pendant. Okay, I'm just letting that sink in, right? That's, and then they give their gifts to each other and they cry and they realize how much they really love each other. Okay, in any case, so that's what this story always reminds me. He says, one day I'm going to give you Yerushalayim Shel Zahav, because what is Yerushalayim Shel Zahav? We're going to see in other sources. It's, and one can even say that it's even more than a motif of hair, it's a crown, right? It's a crown that women would wear in their hair, like a tiara, that had the horizon of Yerushalayim, right, embedded. Right on it. Basically, it was a skyline of Yerushalayim in gold that women were wearing their hair, and it was considered the most exquisite, you know, piece of jewelry. But like today, I think of, you know, the girls who go to Hodaya. Yesh lach mashal me Hodaya? No, because that mamash miyuchad lebenot michul. You know, hers. Oh my gosh, I have to get a Hodaya ring before I go back. Right? Who knows what I'm talking about? Thank you. Mitzuyam. And they had, you know, all the, right, the, you know, with this, yeah, the pasuk or a skyline of Yerushalayim, saw that. Let's take a look then, and we see, sure enough, this is in fact a beautiful expression. What does it mean that he sees he's taking straw out of her hair, and he's thinking of giving her a golden tiara, not a beret, but golden tiara. So I really want you to realize that when Rabbi Akiva, what is he saying? When he sees straw, he's not thinking straw and poverty. What's he thinking? Yerushalayim. And not just the crown, Yerushalayim. He's thinking Yerushalayim. Now, we're supposed to ask ourselves, like, what does this mean? Well, right after the story, there's a knock on the door, and the story continues, but Eliyahu came, and he appeared like an old man. He said, my wife just gave birth, and she has nothing. You know, do you have some straw that we can have that I can provide, like some mattress? And Rabbi Akiva turns to his wife and says, look, and we at least have, you know, Rabbi Akiva, the eternal optimist, a student of Rav Nachum Ish Gamzu. Everything is Gamzu L'tova, Gamzu L'tova. Look, we have straw, they don't. And what does Rachel say? She says, go off now to learn. In other words, what is she afraid of? That Rabbi Akiva is going to be content with the status quo. She says, no. This is not, you know, okay to live with. You have to go off and learn Torah right now. And sure enough, halach v'yashav shtei misrei shana b'beit midrash lefnei Rabbi Eliezer v'Rabbi Yeshua. He started off in Gan Yeladim. He made his way all the way to sit by the Rosh Yeshiva, by the Gedolei Hador, Rabbi Yeshua ben Hanani and Rabbi Eliezer ben Hakonos. Now, why is this so significant? Because we have many more stories about her. Again, after 12 years, he comes back. She says, I wish you'd go back for another 12 years. She gives him permission. And then we have the famous story, the continuation of Ketuvot. Look, it's the very next stuff. Wherein, after 24 years, he comes to B'nai Brak with his 24 students, and she rushes up to meet him, and she crouches to kiss him, and the Talmidim are shooing her away, and he says, what do you mean? Shalika shalachem shalahi. She is the most devoted. Your Torah, my Torah is her Torah. My beautiful, beautiful expression of Rabbi Akiva's appreciation of his wife's devotion. So already we get a sense that, okay, his wife is very devoted. She has straw in her hair, which he sees as not golden straw, but like, right, Rumpelstiltskin, is it? Right. Where he weaves it, right?
Into gold, yeah.
Into gold, right? So he already sees Yerushalayim Shel Zahav. Okay, beautiful. So much so that now we're going to see in source number 5, Avot Rav Minatan, which is, as we know, an early source, meaning it's the end of Tkufat HaTanaim. We have another version. Mahiyat Chilatol Shel Rabbi Akiva. What was the beginnings of Rabbi Akiva? He was 40 years old. He hadn't learned anything. And then we hear that, what's special about Rabbi Akiva? He had Rachel. That it's true, he was poor, and but his main, you know, we would call this in psychology, right, his main mentor, his main force, you know, his tour de force was really Rachel. Then Me'ashana halach l'lamot Torah, he started when he was 40, and then for 13 years, meaning social shishrei shana, he made Torah b'rabim. After 13 years, he was already teaching the rabbin. Amru lo niftar min ha'olam. He started off so poor as a shepherd. Ad shayulo shulchanot shel kesef shel zahav. And by the end, everyone wanted to support him in Torah because he is the Gadol Hador. And he had ladders of gold. Hayta ishto yotza b'kardumim. And his wife would go out with adornments. Ubi'ir shel zahav. Why is this very nice with the Gemara Nedarim? He promised her that one day he would buy her this beautiful golden tiara. And in fact, one day he gave it to her. Amru lo talmidav, and his talmidim said, Rebbe bo shaitanu. We're a little embarrassed, meaning, like you're the Gadol Hador, and your wife is walking around with the most expensive ornament. And what does he respond to them? Harbeit sa'ar, mitzta'ara imi batura. But she went through on that with me. If I would ask her then, and Rabbi Akiva's eyes, what is this? Yerushalayim shel zahav symbolize. What would you say? He says, when I look at it, I don't see the expense. I don't see the glamour in it. What do I see?
The reward for, like, her sacrifice?
Beautiful. In other words, I see her commitments. He says, this is a sign of commitments. Everyone see that? Rabbi Akiva says, this crown is a sign of commitment. So now we understand this a little more. When he was pulling out her straw from her hair, what was he basically recognizing? Oh my gosh, you are so committed to Torah. What was she willing to do?
Have straw in her hair.
Have straw in her hair. That's exactly it for him.
Been,
so that she can learn,
right,
so that he can learn Torah. She forfeited everything. He says, one day I'm going to give you the crown of commitment. Did everyone see that?
What
that's
is
even better.
Side.
Yes. Very nice, because that's an expression of Mesirut Nefesh, commitment, right? Meaning she literally sacrificed. You only sacrifice for things that you're committed to, right? You can call it crowns of sacrifice if you like. It's just the C. I like the alliteration. So that's the, okay, but now we're going to see something beautiful. Everyone ready? That was all introduction. And Shir Hashirim. Who's obsessed with Shir Hashirim?
Rabbi Akiva.
I was going to say I am, but that's only because Rabbi Akiva. How do you know Rabbi Akiva is obsessed with Shir Hashirim?
He doesn't call it Kodesh Kodashim.
I don't put it here. But yes, Rabbi Akiva says, Masachet Yadayim, and he says, oh my gosh, I can't believe people were considering not including Shir Hashirim in Tanakh. Shir Hashirim is Kodesh Kodashim. Which already tells you that Rabbi Akiva, and what does that mean? Shir Hashirim is Kodesh Kodashim. Kodesh Kodashim is a place. Shir Hashirim is a sacred. He means the holiest of holies, right? The closest one can get to HaKadosh Baruch Hu. So he's obsessed with Shir Hashirim, right? Where he looks at Shir Hashirim. Okay, please remember this. And what does Shir Hashirim really represent? Why does Rabbi Akiva say it's not an erotic love story? What is it? Why is it Kodesh Kodashim? It's an expression of our relationship with HaKadosh Baruch Hu. Beautiful. So what does it mean when the Ra'aya, and in classical, I'm going to say commentary, who's the Ra'aya, said Malaga? Am Yisrael. When the Ra'aya, the female persona, says to the Dod, the male persona, Dodi tzach va'adom, my beloved is clear and ruddy, dagum mirvava, he is tall amongst thousands. You're supposed to be thinking, mean that Hashem is like tall and ready. Hashem's like tall, dark, and handsome. Oh my gosh, look at that. Right? Everyone see this? So don't worry, Chazal will say it's referring to different aspects of Hashem. Rosho ketzem paz. So this is also interesting. On his head is a golden stain. What can that mean? Again, she's describing a man indicative of HaKadosh Baruch Hu. That doesn't mean that a man has on his head, beautiful, what's a golden stain? So it could mean a bald spot, but chances are a crown, because we see that in Shir Hashirim. She also talks about the Atara of Shlomo HaMelech. So Rosho Ketan Paz, he has a golden crown. Ah, what do you already see? Rabbi Akiva loves Shir Hashirim. He likes golden crowns. Kibbutzotav Taltalim, his hair is has curls, Shchorot Ka'orev, black as a raven. So what does it mean that Hashem has curls black as a raven? So here's the good news. You don't have to try to be creative, because Chazal already explains, what does this mean? Kvutzutav Taltalim. Amar Rav Chista, Amar Mar Ukva. Milamed is describing, not HaKadosh Baruch Hu, but what's the greatest manifestation of Hashem in a physical way? The Torah. It's a description of the Torah. Melamed sheyesh lidrosh al kol kotz v'kotz tilin tilin shel halachot. What are the black curls of HaKadosh Baruch Hu? Black curls of HaKadosh Baruch Hu. They are the black letters of, right, you have to write a Sefer Torah with black ink. Black letters of a Sefer Torah. And what are you supposed to do with those letters of a Sefer Torah? Where are they curls? Anyone here has curly hair, right? Again, you're supposed to unravel them. That's where you try to figure out all the extrapolatory halachot, which is quite fascinating, because almost consistently throughout Shas, Rabbi Akiva. Anytime someone else says halacha l'moshe mesinai, what does Rabbi Akiva always try to do? Like down to the last daf of Shas, right? Meaning down to Nida. He always tries to say, now I'm going to show you that you can learn this halacha straight from
text.
The text itself, straight from the pasuk, sometimes straight from a letter, sometimes from a curl. What's a curl? A kutzo shel yud. You know, the part that comes down on a yud? Isn't that amazing? Not only that, but take a look at source number 9 that you also saw. Thank you. And with this, we're going to end for tonight, and I'm going to keep you in suspense, but not in too much suspense. This is a perfect place to end right now. We're in Rabbi Moshe Rabbeinu goes up to HaKadosh Baruch Hu at the time of Ma'amad Har Sinai, and he sees Hashem tying crowns to letters. Now, when you're learning this in the Sechem Menachot, and you're thinking of the halachas of the Sefer Torah, what does it mean Hashem is tying crowns to letters? He's tying literally the tagin, you know, Shin Ayin Tet Nun Zayin Gimel Tzadin, they're little crowns on top of these letters. And we'll look at exactly which letters, but tying crowns to the letters, and the black letters of the Torah. And Moshe says, Mima Kiva Yadecha. HaKadosh Baruch Hu, why are you doing this? What's Hashem doing? He's tying crowns to the curls of his hair. Basically, it's like Shirashirim, you know, cherry on top. And Hashem says, I need to tie the crowns onto these letters for whom? Atid.
So
and
then
there's
going to
be someone called Akiva ben Yossi who's going to unravel them. Hashem uses exactly terminology. Shatid lidrosh al kol kotz v'kotz. By the way, prove to me that this beautiful terminology in Menachot knows the terminology in Eruvin. Because it says Rabbi Akiva is going to be dorish kol kotz v'kotz tilin shal halachot. By the way, what are tilin? It's the abridged version of talim. Right, tilin are literally like chains or curls of halachot. Come on, this is so beautiful. Okay, I'm crying inside, even though I know what this means, and this is beautiful. Rabbi Akiva's going to unravel my curls. Right, and yes, tilin shel halachot. So Moshe Rabbeinu says, I want to see this. I want to see. But we already know from the Rabbi Akiva stories, what are the crowns on the letters then? The letters are the curls of halachot. The crowns are what? They're the crowns. The Akiva doesn't, there are no halachot that you learn from the crowns. What are the crowns?
The commitments.
Moshe says, I don't understand this. Hashem says, okay. Chazor l'achorecha. Moshe Rabbeinu sits in Rabbi Akiva's basement. And he hears, tilin shel halachot, and he has no idea what he's talking about. He's very upset. Until the Talmidim say, Rabbi Minayim Lecha, and Rabbi Akiva says, Halacha l'Moshe Mesinai. I got it all from Halacha l'Moshe Mesinai. And Moshe feels much better. He goes back and he says, Hashem, I don't understand. Like, if he's going to teach the Tilan Shal Halachot, he's going to understand, but why are you giving Torah to me? He says, okay, Chazer l'Achorecha. And he says, and I want to see what his reward is. And he sees them weighing the flesh of Rabbi Akiva, that's told to us in Mesech HaBrachot, source number 11, that was come from Rabbi Akiva. They see that, he sees that they're weighing it in the marketplace, and he says, Rabbi Akiva, what is Moshe Rabbeinu going to learn from Rabbi Akiva? Not just tilin shel halachot. What's he going to learn?
The sacrifice?
The crowns, right? The sacrifice, the commitment. That's Rabbi Akiva. Even if Rabbi Akiva himself learns it from Moshe Rabbeinu in source number 10, right, when Hashem says, you can only see my achora, this we spoke about as well, and the Gemara and Brachot, where you see his commitment, Shema Yisrael Hashem Elokeinu Hashem Echad, there we spoke about the terminology of Echad. But just to prove this, Rabbi Akiva is constantly known as Hadorish Kitrei Otiot. So now I ask you, what's the motif of hair, again, in the and crowns in the Rabbi Akiva stories, right? They're going to keep coming up. We haven't finished. The letters are what? Or the hair is what? They unraveling the letters of the Torah to teach halachot, and what are the crowns?
Commitment
to Torah. And we're going to see, that's a nice idea. It's not over yet. Because you already know that what a crown symbolizes. Now I know what the hair symbolizes, and the drashot, and beautiful. What a crown symbolizes? Commitments. It's not just commitment. They're not just crowns. They're What are the crowns in historical? Either crowns on the letters, Kitre Otiot, or?
Well, in Shiroshim, it says Ketem.
Ketem Paz, beautiful. They're golden. Beautiful. So I hear in the Torah, are they golden?
No, they're black.
No, they're black. But in Shir HaShirim, they're golden. And in his wife's hair, they're golden straw that he sees as
Yerushalayim
Shalzah. What in the world, then, are these other crowns that Rabbi Akiva sees? Yerushalayim Shel Zahav is another crown. You already know, though, that in Rabbi Akiva's stories, crowns equals sacrifice or commitment. Hold that thought for tomorrow night. Don't worry. My computer is done, so that's Zach. Can you do this for us?